Welcome to today's episode of Journal Club. I'm Malcolm Diggs. One of my earliest memories is of the Loma Prieta earthquake. It hit California on a Tuesday afternoon in 1989. I was 3 years old, and I was at daycare playing in the sandbox. All I remember is that my universe went from still and quiet to violent and loud very suddenly. In just 20 seconds, 63 people died. Nearly 4,000 were injured and over 12,000 displaced. A piece of the upper deck of the Bay Bridge collapsed, the Nimitz Freeway in Oakland fell down, and local homes and businesses suffered billions of dollars of damages. There was no warning. None. Back then, earthquake early warning systems, EEWs, had been invented, but they weren't installed in California until a few years later. So when a big earthquake hit, nobody had a chance to prepare or take cover. Authorities had no time to slow freeway traffic, turn stoplights red, or close bridges. Now, thankfully, that's all changed. And for good reason. The big one, a megathrust earthquake, could happen in California anytime, and is projected to happen sometime in the next few decades. This time, when it hits, we'll at least have a few moments of warning. Earthquakes consist of at least two waves. A P wave, primary wave, and an S wave, secondary wave. The P wave hits first. It's faster and less violent, usually causing much less damage. The S wave hits second and is slower and does the majority of the damage. The time delay between the P wave and the S wave depends on how far you are from the epicenter, but there is always some sort of delay. For most areas in an impact zone, the delay will be between a few seconds and a minute. Early warning systems work by detecting the P wave and alerting about the imminent S wave, giving the alert recipient critical moments to take cover. Or in the case of municipalities, it gives them time to initiate public safety procedures, send out emergency messages, and sound sirens. EEWs are now installed throughout California and many other seismic hotspots globally. So, what's missing? According to the authors of this paper, the impact zone boundaries and magnitude predictions could both use improvement. They've devised a way to improve them. Their research has two parts. One, they trained a model that can take early earthquake readings from ground stations and infer both the magnitude and the impact zone of the quake. Two, they built a visualization tool that generates interactive maps of the affected areas in near real time. The authors argue that these two additions to EEWs, better magnitude zone predictions and interactive maps, can help provide more robust and accurate warnings to everyone affected by impending and active earthquakes. So, how did they do it? They started by training a model based on historical quake data. They used the Northern California Earthquake Data Center, that's NCEDC's UC Berkeley Seismological Laboratory Dataset 2014. To picture what's in the dataset, assume it's a combination of individual ground station readings coupled with the resultant quake's final magnitude and affected areas. The features they selected for training were latitude, longitude, depth, and the number of stations. Then they trained competing models using the following techniques. Linear regression, they loaded the earthquake data from a CSV, divided it into training and testing parts, initialized a linear regression model, used ordinary least squares to train and minimize errors, then predicted the magnitude of the testing set. Next was SVM, support vector machine. Four different SVM instances were initialized, one for each of the magnitude types. They imported the libraries, selected the magnitude type subset needed, created an SVM regressor and trained it, then evaluated on the test set. Next, they did a neural network. They used scikit-learn to import the library, standardize the input features, initialize the neural net regressor, then fit the regressor to the training data. Then they ran inference on the test set. Then they did random forest. They initialized the hyperparameters to construct the RF regressor, then predicted earthquake location using an ensemble of decision trees. Last, they did gradient boosting. They built a series of weak learners using the negative gradient from the loss function to fit each weak learner. They imported the libraries, initialized the GB regressor, then ran iterative training. So they did all five of those things: linear regression, SVM, neural network, random forest, and gradient boosting. Once all those models were trained, they compared their performance using mean absolute error, mean square error, and R squared. In the end, the neural net was the clear favorite. With the neural net as their base, they built an affected area visualization tool using Folium, which is mapping software, and GeoPandas, which is a geospatial data add-on for Pandas, the Python data analysis tool. The resulting application is screenshotted within the paper. As far as real-world applications, the authors leave it in our hands to integrate these techniques and tools into public systems. The research is theoretical and will need to be replicated and put through its paces before being deployed in the wild. As the used open datasets to train the model, you should be able to replicate the results using scikit-learn in a fairly straightforward way. The paper includes more details concerning the algorithms and equations they use in each step. If you're interested in replicating this research or even extending it or integrating it into your system, then I'd encourage you to download the paper, which is linked in the email. Their data availability statement will point you to the data set that you'll need for training and validation. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.